that really help. So thanks.
Dick, are you going to introduce?
Yes. Hello. Welcome to Access Space. This is a weekend event for us. It's two events about openness, and today we have a lot of guests. Patrice Raymond, Lisa Haskell, Tony Prue. We've got Sam Hardy and guy from So we're going to start off with a discussion between these three people here about ideas about hacking state, which is Tony Prue's subject, and Patrice Raymond, who's been our artist in residency for the last 3 weeks, has also been looking at a similar sort of topic and may have come to kind of an opposite kind of argument. And Lisa here is going to sit between them and hopefully do a bit of moderation. We'll see how heated it gets. We're going to go up until about 2 o'clock for that. Then we're going to have half an hour for this week's soft drinks chat, and then we're going to get on to a bigger panel discussion with Dominic, James, Orbank and Sam Vardy. During the break, if anything pops up in your mind that you want to ask the panel about, please feel free to write it on this whiteboard. So we'll have some sort of structure created by yourselves for the second part.
Yes, that's it.
Take it away.
I may add about the second part maybe something, but it's at the moment we have kind of sitting, it's a big classroom-like and stuff. I think if you like another arrangement, please take the chairs, they are light, and do something else. The second part would also, we think it would be much more dialogue discussion with you people than really a kind of panel thing. So the first part is a bit more like panel thing, because I'm going to explain what I've been doing here. As Jake said, I was the artist in residence for the past 3 weeks at Access Space. I applied for this residency under the title of a project which I called Hacking Society. And Hacking Society was in the original idea of the student, could be understood as both a hacking society, like a society of friends or something like that. People being together, and also the other part is hacking society in the sense of trying to understand society, trying to get into it, trying to see how it works, trying to get the knowledge, a bit like hackers do with computer programs and installations and so on. And then, as things progressed, I also saw that there was another aspect, which was of hacking society, than being society being hacked. The original inspiration for this whole thing was Tony Cook's project, which is called Hack the State, and was amusing, but a bit funny, but I think very sensible slogan is, anarchists want to destroy the state. Excuse me, I'm also getting a cough. Cool. Anarchists want to destroy the state. Socialists want to take over the state. But we say, let's hack it. And I found it a very interesting point of departure, because not so long ago, I experienced in the Netherlands, where I come from, because I'm based in Amsterdam, a very interesting and quite inspiring, if somewhat exceptional, thing taking place, namely a group of citizens being fed up with the way in the Netherlands elections were conducted by way of electronic voting using so-called voting computers. A group of citizens, many of them hackers, but surely not all, decided to do something about it and said voting computers are simply not a good thing if you want to have fair and true and open and verifiable elections. Because computers are black boxes, and especially if you don't know the program, you are probably familiar with something you probably got to discuss also later on. The difference between proprietary software and free software, also called in some sort of open source software, that if you don't know how the code works, if it is closed and secret, you can't verify what is happening. So you have the voting computers which basically take your vote, and then you have to trust that you vote as you have voted actually comes out. And then you have to trust experts, and well, it's exactly not how democracy is being conducted. And these people put a very strong argument, which in the beginning was met with ridicule. And this group called We Do Not Trust Voting Computers went through the famous four stages of Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi description of political struggle. First, they in the beginning they know you, then they laugh at you, then they battle you, they really attack you, and then you win. And that's what happened. And it happened because the people in that group took very seriously the mechanism of how governance, that is called, is working. And one of the chief instruments, tools that was used by the group of which I was part, was the freedom, what's called in Britain the Freedom of Information Act, and in the Netherlands is called the Openness of Government Law. And really deconstructed it to get really the maximum out of it, leading to a situation after months and months that the group knew more about how the law was working than the government employees themselves. And that for me was a typical instance of hack the state. You have this big apparatus of government, of authorities. You, in the beginning, you don't know exactly how it works. The whole discourse of society at this moment is one of expertise and citizens says, and especially I must say in what I understand, I have also a French background, please excuse me for that, the English or Anglo-Saxon political system, which tends even more to see the political process as one of the, working a bit like a market. Well, you vote for a certain government, and then after that, you shut up, you leave it to the people who are really in the know. You leave it to the experts. The big thing is to get that expertise, transfer that expertise from where it's supposed to sit. Because one of the things you quickly see is that expertise is not really there, and get it to the citizenry so that it can work and it can apply and it can get something of the power and the influence on their side. So I was looking at various initiatives and groups that are doing exactly that or pretend to do that, because what came out also quite quickly is that actually there is a whole discourse of openness, of transparency, of control, of checks, and of information. We live in an information society. And what you saw that, in fact, quite a lot of it is done not so much from the citizenry or in favor of the citizenry, but it's done by the authorities or groups and organizations which are allied to the authorities. And then you get this very strange phenomenon that instead of the citizenry getting the knowledge from the state apparatus, the state apparatus at all levels is getting knowledge from the citizenry. And then you get into an almost kind of commercial setting where citizens are resource. And they are to be tapped for information, for suggestion. Also, in not an important part, for labor, because you can, as it is called in complicated work, you can externalize a lot of your activities as government by giving it to the citizenry. And there is where IT plays an important role. You get, for instance, all these forms to be filled, which you can fill online. It's a good example of things that were previously being done by the state, but now you are this being pushed on your side without remuneration. You have to do the work. They need not to do the work. Cuts costs, makes it easy for them, and so on and so forth. And
So then I came to, also in discussion with Tony, I came to the conclusion that very often it's not us hacking the state, but it's the state hacking us, and all kind of things in between. Well, that was doing this kind of research here. I also saw that it's in fact a very, in the beginning I thought it was fairly simple. Then I started thinking it's a kind of continuum between what I've called hacking the state on one hand and the state hacking us on the other side. And then it became even more complicated because in fact there are so many things playing. There are things about, for instance, data and information. What you see is that more and more and more data is becoming public. This is something that is done often by these very instances you call the state hacking us. But by hacking us also they give a lot of information which can be used. So it's not a totally black and white situation. It's a lot of things happening. And I must confess that it's something that is fairly classic in this kind of research situation. I end up with more questions on it at the end of my stay than I started with. And well, that's the moment. Having said that, I would like to invite Tony to the.
Well, I think that my Hack the State idea came out of my PhD project, which I tried to do for a year at LSE, but there they tried to hack me far more than I was able to hack them. And they're good hackers, they're very good hackers at LSE. They're state hackers. Of course, they hack us, that's their job. But I think it's nothing new. It's just using the term hack to describe what the state does, but it's been historically, especially with the industrial post-industrial revolution and capitalism, it's the default mode of operation to use the energy of citizens or workers. And for me, the most appealing mode of rebellion there is workerism in Italy. And Hart and Negri tried to do it with three books to formalize it in a sense that it makes sense to us. But I think it's the least bad of all attempts. But I don't think it's very good. I've read Commonwealth almost twice. It's a very good book, but they don't. It's empirically miles and miles and miles away from these actual events. It's almost too nice to be a philosopher. I think it's an easy option today to be a philosopher. So my research basically led me to say, why don't we hack back? Why don't we? And also, hack for me, the presupposition of a hack is an object that's already functional. So when you when you go into a piece of code, you have access to it, B, it already does something. You don't start from scratch. The whole idea is skip, what James has been doing for a long time. That's part of being a good hacker, is you combine things from what's out there. The state often doesn't do that. It has this mass of people. Foucault described it well, how it was with the health system and with social services being established first. The idea was that we are ready to go back to work. And so I don't think actually when the state hacks us, I think it's a different kind of operation because we are not institutionalized. We're not an object that does something. They more see us as a rubble. There's mass of people out there who do something. Let's give them some jobs and do something with them. So I wouldn't actually call hacking, but they definitely tap into our desire, into our energy, into our creativity, into what we want to do. They can't deal without us. But if we look at the pre-industrial revolution, if we look at a feudal system, it was a brutal enclosure of space and forcing people into factories. So for me, that wasn't necessarily bad at all. And I'm there with Marx that capitalism was a good, forceful, abuse, violent abuse of the old system and crushing its spine, so to say. But I think we have to do the same today and think, how can we crush the spine of the system that exists today? The same move has to be done twice.
Especially since that the nature of what you call the ramble has changed.
Yes, precisely.
Because the biggest problem that we have at the moment, I think, is that the problem of unrepresentation.
Yeah.
They see in political sciences is the theory of the crisis of representation, which put in a simple way is people distrust politicians.
Yeah.
Politicians do not represent any longer, are not seen any longer to represent the interest of the people and defend them, even if it's their own constituency. You have that in all parties, basically. That's one of the things that explains the coming up of parties, of populist parties, of parties from the extreme right. And I think one of the things that we really have to think about ways of re-representing the people.
Yeah. In, I mean, in that sense, it's exactly, we're not rubble anymore. I was just trying to put it in historic context. But now, I think first communities that make us stop being rubble, other than the classical left political movements, i.e. the unions and the parties, are academia, research centers, and what became known as hackers in late 50s when they started calling themselves hackers. But there were generations and generations of hackers. I don't think there's a simple term that can capture the whole generational move, and it still changes. It's different now than 10 years ago. So now actually it's much more of a state hacking, because they're already hacking shapes and forms. I mean, you can tell that the way web was produced, it's quite well formalized. I mean, Internet Engineering Task Force meet 4 times a year. Over 1,000 people comes to every conference where working groups are open. They use the term open process. They say the fundamental way we organize is that everyone who wants to be part of any decision making or discussions can do so. The working groups are open. It's a principle that's partly part of local government. I mean, prior to coming this day before yesterday, I researched local councils in UK papers. And there's a big battle. There's been a new paper last year. We changed how the secrecy of papers is discussed. So, for example, if I go in Brooklyn, Lewisham, where I live in London, if I go to a local meeting, as soon as there is a discussion about a bid for a commercial deal, which is pretty much all that matters when it comes to privatization and externalization that Patrice talks about, you're asked to leave a room because these are documents that are classified. So this is, I think, an interesting point of battle that's currently happening. And a lot of good, well-meaning liberal activists like my society, who won't change anything, but they can contribute to opening of data, and they can contribute to at least pushing the state. These boundaries are at least challenged. But what never gets challenged through a liberal political discourse of this kind of activism, of course, is the very foundation of the right to property, you know, the right to state, the right to decision making, most important, representation model. So I think I was surprised at all when Patrice started telling me all these names. Look, they're hacking us, of course. I mean, that's the historic move. What's interesting, the left never thinks in terms of how can we take their terrain. And if anyone read it's not manifesto, but it's de facto conservative manifesto, Res Republica, the paper of which basically states how conservatives will, if they win election, they will allow cooperation, and they call it cooperatives, within NHS, within education, and they will call clusters of employees who can form together a company. Of course, they spin it through, their examples are John Lewis, and their example, there was another example as well, I forgot one, historically big one on the left. But basically, they're using the words self-organization. They're using explicitly saying neoliberalism has failed to deliver what it promised to deliver. These are the words of conservatives' think tanks on which David Cameron is basing. So, but what is he using it to counter it? He's using self-organization. He's using cooperation. He's using terms historically that are part of the left and part of the left attempt to not be part of the industrial revolution. This is an example of them hacking us again, for me, clearly. Because now, like Patrice said, we're not rubbing anymore. I mean, if we look at the amount of self-organization that happens in spaces like this one, you know, and in general in the online activist communities, which are better and better organized, there is an enormous amount they can tap into, and they will continue doing so. But what left never does, left never goes to the right and says, okay, let's breach the boundaries, you know, almost like a special forces. You go to enemy's field in the night. No, I'm serious. I mean, I've spoken to friends who did this in war, in few wars, not just the one in the ex-Yugoslavia, and fell through. I've spoken to special forces here, to people I met, how it works for them. And it's kind of similar kind of operation. I think they know, the right knows how to do it well, and left always stuck with unions and the parties and never learned how to go to enemy's terrain. And for me today, the way to go to enemy's terrain is precisely to say, no, neoliberals were right with few things. They were right about efficiency. They were right that the state is not really functioning as it should. They're right about the need to transparency and accountability, but they didn't deliver any of it, and they will never deliver it. And nothing that's based on the private ownership and the idea of private profit will deliver. Only a new political left project which has the guts to formalize itself on the ideas of socialism, and specifically on the ideas of communism as a theoretical base, only something like that can deliver this. But the left today can claim and empirically prove it very well. Numbers, evidence, whatever is needed, that the neoliberals failed to deliver.
Yeah, what
so it takes time to hack back.
Yeah, well, exactly. What you point to is also that we, amidst all these things, we are living in a really great political crisis, which has a lot to do with the so-called crisis of implementation. That is that we, the way things were understood is no longer working.
we have failed in a certain sense to make the transition, and we alone. This is the last group I researched, and I came to that 3 days ago, and that was coming via someone who told me in the Netherlands that this was existing. It's a Demos group.
Yeah.
Demos, which is it's really funny. It has a completely Demos is one of these online call it activist site, which has a discourse. If you are not warned beforehand, well, they are quite upfront. They are conservative. They are using it's a fine illustration of what Tony was saying. They are using all the concepts which we would in generally associate with, if not the left, in any case, being liberal in the good sense of the word. They're completely taking it over, and it's really time to realize that, and it's extremely concerning that the traditional things do not do it, and that a lot of people,
I mean, it's
I just wanted to if you could maybe just say a bit more specific things, some examples of the organisations that you put on the list, and things that they're doing, because I think that might be
well
useful for them. Then
I've looked into something like 20 organisations, which I have in the beginning classified a bit in this continuum of hacking the state to the state hacking us. I was looking at some like open rights, which I put quite on the side of being on the side. The criterion was to be on the side, whether you were on the side of the citizen group and wanted to empower the citizens and help them getting knowledge or so, or whether you were on the side of the state, quite often because you were funded by the state, to get the knowledge out of the citizenry, get the governments going, be more efficient, etc., etc. So, I don't have the screen in my head. Open rights was one of them.
Today's ago.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will go in that case very quickly through it. Tom, you have a member of parliament. An interesting thing also, we are talking, by the way, the word hacking, hackers comes often. This is a kind of shorthand because in this information society, IT has really become something that is it's a conduit of many of our activities. But it has become a very normal thing. But it's from that world that often words and concepts and things are taken. You have an interesting aspect. You have one politician. There are a few more, yes. Tom Watson, who is Labour MP, who is one of the very few politicians who is clued in about matters of IT. Because at the same time as IT is so important in our lives, very few people, especially decision makers, appear to understand very much how it works, what it means, what you can do with it, etc., etc. Tom Watson has started things like the power of information.
Which is a blog.
My Society is also something he has been supporting. My Society defines itself as follows. It has two missions. The first is to be a charitable project which builds websites that give people simple, tangible benefits in the civic and community aspects of their lives. The second is to teach the public and voluntary sectors through demonstrations how to use the internet most efficiently to improve lives.
I've seen Tom Steinberg, I think his surname, I keep forgetting. I've seen his talk, he was invited at Google headquarters a year ago, and then I've seen another interview. In both places, he explicitly states he has no interest or desire to challenge the representational model nor the parliamentary model, and that all he wants is basically to improve, you know, which is a classic liberal position. I think from that position, you can't really do very useful things, but they can do some useful things for us.
A very typical site that is coming from the government is data.gov.uk, but it's quite clear that it's a government thing. It's Her Majesty's government site, which seeks to give a way into the wealth of government data, and it's under constant development, because I immediately say after this, we are very aware that there are more people like you outside of government who have the skills and abilities
to make wonderful things out of public data. These are your first steps in building a collaborative relationship with you. I mean, the better illustration of please help us. I saw that we had a club a bit like that in the Netherlands, which is called Hack the Overnight, which literally means hack the state. But it's a bit the opposite, because it's a Dutch site whose aims and constituency appears closely related to rewired state. I will speak about that also. Geeks liaising with the government, geeks is another word for hackers, liaising with the government and vice versa to make things better. Revived state. I passed over that one, but it's a main question. The motto of revived state is geeks meet government. The other motto is geeks is another word for hackers. You have geeks, nerds.
How's it spelled?
Geeks.
Oh, that's an English word as well.
That's an English word. Excuse me. Now, the interesting about rewired state was that I thought. Now, this is a classic, but not being very upfront about that, like the state hacking thing. But Tony pointed out, these geeks are, by necessity, making a lot of data available. So that can be used, they are useful in that sense, even if they are funded by the state, even if it's a state that is inviting them to. I mean, it goes even as far that in rewired state, the government invites the geeks, or hackers, to hack them.
Yeah.
They conduct hack days. But in
they invited the government. They spoke to the government.
In doing so, they still make a lot of, that was part of what I called the cloud, they make a lot of data available. So they are useful. One can do something with it. But one should. Is it happening?
Well, I went to a talk by a civil servant who's responsible for this data.gov.uk thing. And I went to a talk that was it was organised by the UKUG Open Conference, so it's the Unix users group, so it was really quite techie kind of audience, yeah. And it was really quite embarrassing because the guy said, we're doing all this stuff with open government data, and we invite you to come and make mashups, and you know, it's all very kind of superficial, and everybody talked about it. Then he proudly waved a couple of DVDs around and said, this is all the traffic data from, you know, some obscure bit of data. Kind of static data on a DVD that he volunteered to give to people to go and make mashups with it and then increase the great openness of government. It was just extraordinary. But he didn't receive any criticism from the floor for doing that.
Because the political consciousness of hackers is usually that of a cat. Well, I mean, you know, I was in those communities.
Don't
and that's like, I mean, it was really extraordinary. It was such a kind of, I thought it was such a, the move that this guy made, had sort of misunderstood the entire issue, and yet he wasn't taken to task from it.
I mean,
so maybe he could say a little bit more about hackers and actually this kind of, who are you talking about? What kind of practices are you talking about? Because I think you're using it very broadly, and we're here because we're interested in, we work with technology and so on, but that's not really what you're talking about.
No.
So.
No, I'm talking about two things. That's why the discussion with Dominic yesterday, interesting one on email. He was using the term open source, and I told him open source is ethical cleansing of free software. And free software is one specific brand of history of hackerism, but it's an important brand because of the GPL. It's their general public license. It's their legal hack that made it more important than anything else. And well, Alain Badiou would say the St. Paul's conversion to the road to Damascus of Richard Stallman, who said, I'm not taking this, no matter what, who slept in his office, you know, all the historical baggage. But the guy did spend years writing code at the beginning on his own and then with other people, and he was considered a lunatic and a total nutter for 10 years. He says so, and his friends confirmed it. They all thought that he's crazy. But he pulled it off. He created infrastructure on which Linux was eventually built. And so what I was saying is, Dominic, his use of open source was specifically targeted to businesses, and it was not hidden. Richard Stallman was excluded from all discussions. It was a way to bring money, to bring investment to those communities of programmers. And the term changed several times, but I think this the schisms, important schisms for me, were Foundation of Free Software, which was in 1985, the GNU Manifesto, then the 99, the Netscape source code going down, the open source becoming de facto business model, and Creative Commons, Lawrence Lessig, that's another, I think, fourth stages. And what happened to open source? Open source never looked at, for example, Internet Engineering Task Force as a model at all. They never mentioned the openness of the processes, which was essential for communities. Free software doesn't mention those as well. When you look at the four freedoms, there's nowhere the process of has to be open. And Free Software Foundation is totally opaque, closed organization, not accountable to its members. I mean, I've been a member for 10 years, paying my dues because I want them to have some funds to work. But they're as untransparent, as unopen as it gets. I mean, I think it would be easier to talk to my MP sometimes than to them. But I don't even try, because I knew that from seeing people and from seeing Richard Stallman up close, I realized there's no point even engaging. Like, let them do what they do, and they do it as well as they can. So with open source removed two things. It removed ethics. Free software was based on the ideas of ethics, i.e. we will share. It wasn't something that's up to discussion. It wasn't something that, you know, we'll go to the parliament or we go to, you know, speaker's corner and discuss it. Simply, we share, we think it's political value to share, that we have the right to form communities. So for me, back to you, when I think what's crucial to keep and to come back to is ethics and organization, forms of organization. And forms of organization, something that Richard Stallman has been really bad at, hence the open source try to fork and take it. But the Eric Raymond work that he did on founding it, it was a total falsification. I was really shocked when I read it in detail for the first time 2 years ago. Sorry?
Read Eric Raymond.
Yes, I read his work for the first time. I went first to, you know, Bazaar. I knew all the essays and letters, but now I took a little bit of a broader look, and I read first versions, later versions. It's a complete, it's really schizophrenic piece of document. It's a document where at the beginning he affirms one thing, then later he affirms something else by actually killing the first argument that he used. But obviously it worked. It was a great piece of propaganda. At least it works on Tim O'Reilly, who is a rich man now. He wasn't a rich man back then.
And it works, of course, then some element of contextualization is needed. It works, of course, the better in the American the American environment. It works far less in other environments. And one of the interesting aspects is that the discussions about the differences between free software and open source that can be very heated in all parts hardly exist in a country like France, for instance, for a very simple linguistic reason, that their logiciel libre is understood as free in the sense of freedom.
Yeah.
And then in that we plug back into politics. One of the things that has in fact been disappeared from politics these days is the idea of freedoms. The fundamental rights that people have and the protection of these fundamental rights.
Yeah.
And why you do things, because there are these, we can also call constitutional rights, and at least I have the idea that this has completely been washed out by, among other things, the preeminence of the economics and the market. And in the case of open source, that was clearly what was happening. The whole political discourse and ethical discourse of Stallman was unwelcome because too complicated and maybe threatening, and had to be tweaked into something that was business friendly,
it was the part of manifesto was, let's get managers to invest money, and they managed within a year and a half from the Open Source Foundation. You know, IBM announced the famous letter, we're going to invest $1 billion in supporting free software because they're, well, open source then. because they realized there's value on it. But I think it was just a matter of time. I think even if open source didn't do the surgical removal of the organizational model from, for example, IETF and the free software ethic, it would still have happened, just slower, at a slower pace. That's my judgment. Because if you're a corporate CTO and you're looking at all this energy of volunteers, you know, people paid by universities, i.e. by the state, you know, or living on a dole, whatever, and hacking away, producing great code. Why wouldn't you take that code if it's freely available? I mean, they would be bad corporate managers if they didn't do it. But open source made sure that those who were involved at the beginning got the money for it. I mean, they were all multiple millionaires, some close to billionaires out of it. So it was a worthwhile effort.
Which is a form of, it's something that many Americans would understand as ethics.
Yeah, and Dominic's question on email, it was an important one. Basically, he said to me that he thinks it's a neutral, agnostic, as you called it, not politicized, it has no political or philosophic values which are fixed or predetermined, but it can be used in both ways, the communities. Is that correct?
As it stands before, just by human hand.
Yeah.
And then the minute that we interact with human beings, our values are placed upon that system.
But I want to respond to that because I think that's an important point. It's from my reading, I tried, I'll continue doing it, but I spent at LSE mainly because I couldn't do political stuff with them. I ended up just reading history of hackers and, you know, books, whatever I found, literally from letters from 60s and stuff onwards. And what I found was there were two distinct things at the beginning. One was access. That's why it's nice to hear access space. I mean, in late 50s, the famous railroad club that they were building, the rail models, they had basically every time they would lock them, they would break in. And what they, you know, that's why when you go to Hackers Conference, you have the tool, the open organization of lockpickers, the famous Dutch one, and European. So there was this utter disrespect for property and for the idea that either the state or the corporations have the right to dictate access to the latest technology. People who at that time were really youngsters in their early 20s mainly called themselves hackers. And there were two basic principles, which is in Levy's book, Hackers, the early book that he wrote. Two principles. One was implementation work, which I was shocked to discover that open organizations work we did deriving from in the media organizational model. We pretty much founded the same thing. I have no idea that hackers did that. They said you can get the key to the computer room, which they will break into every night if they lock it, and they kept changing locks. And what they do, they break in, they steal the lock and they steal a key. I didn't quite understand how they did it, and make a copy. And basically, from then on, they enter for 2 months without anyone knowing that every single night there are bunches of people hacking away at computers which costed millions of dollars. So disrespect for property, and you only get a key after 40 hours of work. And they actually judge what counts at work. So it's not talk that counts at work, like it does in academia, and it's very frustrating at times. It's actually doing the work. Whatever they mean. It was mainly work to do with, you know, computers, fixing them, hardware issues, writing software. So these were two earliest possible stances. It was disrespect for property, the sense of community, sense of cooperation, self-organization, and the meaning of work, which today, if you go to any list, I mean, GCC is my favorite. If you go to GCC, when I intensely looked at it, it was late 90s, so a compiler, C compiler for a GNU project. You will just look at the people who try to propose something. They will be just told off immediately. Your proposal is very nice, but unless you're ready to implement it, or unless you know someone who will implement it, please don't waste our time and go away. Or we will log your email as a feature request, and it will be implemented in 5 years' time and someone has. So there's this, you know, intensity of doing the work. And so back again to what specific hackerism. For me, what specific is ethics and legal hacks of GPL. We will share, no matter what, the right to form. I mean, Richard Stallman says all the time, the right to form communities. In GNU Manifesto, it literally says that every single contribution to society, which is worthwhile for the society, has to be shared. He also says that it has to be shared so that all the automation of labor that we, the programmers, the hackers, bring to society can be shared to everyone. I mean, what is this if not the Communist Manifesto? Because recently I read the Communist Manifesto again. I'm reading bits of it, and I literally took a couple of pages of Communist Manifesto, inserting hackers, education, you know, academia, self-organization, anarchism, just the terms which are relevant to me today, in terms of, and it completely works as a text. And I actually presented to Goldsmith, no one knew that it was, you know, Communist Manifesto until I say it. Well, I don't know, maybe some people recognize it. You know, there are 2-3 people in the room maybe who might have recognized it, but it works.
Could I just...
Chip in. Go.
I think one of the questions that Lisa was getting to was this question of the word hacker.
Yeah.
And there is, of course, I think that the panelists here, correct me if I'm wrong, are understanding the word hacker to be the word defined in RFC 1392, I think, as someone who's very interested in a complex system, who is analyzing it, taking it apart, rebuilding it, reconfiguring it, understanding it, reconstructing it perhaps for their own purposes.
Yeah.
Okay? Whereas, of course, just as there is a kind of a linguistic battle going on over the word free,
yeah,
there is also a linguistic battle which has been going on over the word hacker,
yeah,
which now in common parlance in the English-speaking word means a criminal person who is,
yeah,
breaking into something and stealing something.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that we, you know, you're not using that second, if
no,
you like, common definition of the word hacker.
No.
Okay.
No.
However, I was just listening to 2600 Magazine's,
yeah,
recent podcast,
yeah,
in fact last night, which was using the common parlance definition of the word hacker, in other words, someone who is breaking in, someone,
yeah,
who is semi-criminal.
Yeah.
And they have just recently done a study of 14 to 19-year-olds here in the UK and discovered that 25% of 14 to 19-year-olds would describe themselves as a hacker, that they have engaged in hacking activities. And what they mean by that,
yeah,
is actual criminal break-ins,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, using computers. And... which typically trying to get someone else's Facebook account password.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is 25% of 14 to 19-year-olds. Okay. I actually think there's something quite cheerful about it.
Yeah, I think it's great. No, but I mean, it's last night we watched the film, Michael Moore's Capitalism, the love story film. And you know, it's really intriguing there to see a member of Senate saying, you know, you people do not leave your homes, you know, get lawyers to find you a copy of the actual mortgage contract that you signed, because corporations and insurance companies are in such a mess, they will not produce a copy, has to make your own copy, therefore do not leave your homes, don't get them let you evict you. You know, break the law, it was a clear call. I mean, I don't see this, I mean, in my local Lewisham activism in London as well, there's this big thing about the law. I mean, the law is there to be broken and hacked as well. Lawyers break the law every single day. I mean, they interpret the law. It's their job. You know, and this is again left not understanding the state. Left really, I mean, it's really, left has this old, you know, historic notion of we'll smash the state in assembly, take it over, and then we'll, you know, let it go away, you know, which East Europe tried to do, or as Foucault said, but it doesn't work really. Once you take over the systems which are designed to oppress, to keep under control, and to have 5% of minority being rewarded, you can't just make it do something else. It needs to be hacked. It's a long process, you know, it's a process engaging with objects of the state.
And so when you're saying hacked, what you're saying is kind of examined,
yeah,
disassembled, understood, reconfigured.
For other purposes than originally designed. That's key. That's a key word. It's been designed to oppress, to keep under control, to suck energy, to make us work, whatever. We're going back from 8-hour days now, you know, back to the industrial days in terms of people. I mean, in US it's typical. Even programmers do two jobs. Or as a shocking thing from Michael Moore's movie, pilots are on $70,000. You know, they actually do two jobs. There was a waitress and a pilot at the same time. Full-time pilot with a waitressing second job, you know, which I didn't know exists in US. Or my friends in US telling me, look, we're jobless because they're giving 100,000 visas to people from all over the world because they want us to be jobless so that price of our labor goes down and then we don't negotiate anymore. We work. So these are the functions of the state. We have to understand. But it doesn't mean that we have to be romantic about it and say, we'll either take it as it is, it doesn't work. We tried it in East Europe and it doesn't work. Even if you try to change it, it doesn't work. Or we'll simply smash it like the anarchists. So my idea was, you know, beyond the original purpose. But they hack us all the time. RSA, have a look at it, Royal Society for Arts, the design and society, there's now a thread that's happened. They just had this long PDF of text, which looks at the history of hackerism and takes this idea and makes it into a commercial model and saying, no, let's cut the middleman. Let's just have the users and the producers, i.e. architects and designers, being hackers, working together for more efficient business models to make sure we make more money. And the whole, you know, even open source is very political in this sense, but God forbid anything like, you know, free software or the open process idea. But for me, I think this open process idea that I came across, I didn't know really, it's in Internet Engineering Task Force. For those who don't know, this is an organization that started as a volunteer organization. It started really by people saying we need protocols that work and we need to work together. But imagine cable television today, separate networks. You pay for it, you whatever, £20 a month, and you have only that channels. The internet today, if it wasn't for Internet Engineering Task Force, would be the same thing. It would be the cable television. We would have this, you know, different companies offering different access. We would not have this global network where we can talk to each other. It happened not because the state designed it, not because military paid for it. Not because the state minister said we want this. They're clueless. They don't know what they want at all. It happened because volunteer desire, in a pure Lacanian sense, really, it's desire of the people to live together, to cooperate, to work in positive sense. But if we don't today, because we're not problem, if we don't use these models of self-organization that we came up with and formalize them in the state and take the money, take all the money from the state if we can, because it's our money anyway, but learn how to take it, then I think that's the only strategy I can see, because, you know, with the old left model, I tried to engage, but it doesn't work today.
So Tony, who are the hackers? Who's going to hack the state?
I think there are plenty of state hackers around. I mean,
I don't think you're talking about, you know, hacking.
No, like Queen Mary Department, they're hackers.
I really hope that's not what you're talking about.
Queen Mary Department, where I work, I think they're hackers. I think they're true state hackers. What they, it's a left Marxist took over the department, and now we have 10 people on the left. They're staff members. There are 15 students. There are 15 more on their way. You know, every position is a battle negotiation. It's a pure hack. Business school definitely was not designed to deliver a left political projects, nor to produce left PhD students, nor to teach, you know, kids the history of left struggles and workers. And it was designed to, well, you know, produce better managers or whatever. But that it's a hack, but it might not last forever. It's not the kind of hack that might be the kind of hack I would want as well. Because academia is very well led from the top. It's very, the state has carefully managed academia to use us when they need us and reject us when they, I mean, currently they're doing the rejection based on the model of crisis. And I'm looking now from close distance, and it's amazing. Like my colleagues who teach told me that it's been led by SWP member from King's College in London, but which there's a problem because of course organizational issues come up straight away. It's centralized, it's, you know, lunatic in a sense. But if we mix an SWP member with a hacker, with a liberal hacker from US, we will get a good mix-up. But it's basically a member said to me, look, Tony, how can we, because we talked about hacking a lot at the department and stuff, and, you know, people discussing each other, how do we go back to the moment where unions were literally, when they won the legal battle? Because what left doesn't do, what I told my colleagues, I mean, not still a staff member, I'm a student, I've got a scholarship for 3 years ending next year, so we don't have the same kind of problems, and you can tell that you're not being, you know, you're not being kind of consulted in the same way. Of course, you have different relation with the institution. But what I told them, if I was a staff member, look at it this way. Can we get enough money to pay the best lawyers the money can buy? Can we actually get money together? Or can we actually get pro bono lawyers? And simply change the laws. The union is not anymore the only worker representation organizational model at work. But we have something else based on anarchist model, based on hackers, based on self-organization, on co-ops, whatever that is. But for some reason, left never considers this as an option, as if the law is there not to be broken. I mean, law is broken when it was designed. And like Lisa said, lawyers' jobs is to break it every single day. You know, and about 25% criminals, that's great. It's a great start, I didn't know.
Well, no, 75% other union.
You know, they learn other things eventually. It's fine, it leads to other things. But I think disrespect for property is a great first step to be a good hacker, because, you know, if you think you're denied access to knowledge and to learn, which this might not be the case, but this was the original desire, that's always a good thing. And making new laws, you know, it's not just this rebellion, anarchist rebellion, oh, I disrespect the law. No. Break the law and make a new law and get the best lawyers.
I mean, it's probably worth pointing out that,
yeah,
you know, I've no doubt that they wouldn't have publicised the results of asking 14 to 19-year-olds, yeah, how many... what proportion of 14 to 19-year-olds paid close attention to copyright law when it comes,
yeah,
to music?
Yeah.
I'm perfectly certain that I would be very surprised if there was 1% of 14 to 19-year-olds who could thoroughly confirm that,
yeah,
every track on their iPod is fully paid for in the ways that it should be. And at the last count, I believe that it would cost, if you go to the Apple iTunes store and fill your iPod with tracks from the iTunes store, it would cost about £31,000.
That's a nice number, yeah. So who's paying £31,000
for it? I'm not really entirely sure whether all 14 year olds can command that kind of budget for those purposes.
But we just tells you that they know perfectly well. Apple knows what they live off. You know, they don't have the illusion that it's all filled with the music, of course. And they have lawyers and they have economists who calculate all this, and cynically they still do it, pretending as if they're not the elite. I mean, if you look at it, Apple is just a bunch of criminals. You know, they stole the BSD.
Apple are essentially, you know, in a very awkward relationship with the music industry itself.
Can I start something quickly to that?
Yeah.
Do they not? I mean, we're currently in a situation now where we're being told because we're downloading the album tracks illegally, because we're downloading MP3s, they now have the right to use deep packet inspection.
Yeah. Yes, that's a new.
So it's kind of like a cowboy film, and then you go like pick up the gun.
Yeah.
Not particularly. No, you're going to get shot. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, because I was going to ask you if you're coming to the end of this part of the session. So it seems like in your research you've accumulated some, you know, these leaks and these organisations, but it feels to me like you're actually not very cognizant that these online initiatives really have some kind of radical edge to them. And I'm wondering if you come away with a feeling that somehow maybe online culture is a bit of a safe force already in terms of...
Yeah, it's interesting that you say this, because it's basically, I had not thought about it, but I immediately recognize it as a very, very possible, if not likely, outcome.
Because it also relates to your point that, you know, actually the online world is also quite become kind of hazardous, very criminalized, very commercialized, and then, you know.
There are two things happening. On one hand, it's a very old, but getting more and more people are getting more and more conscious of that actually the online life, to call it like this, and anything that has to do with IP, the time you spend on Facebook and all that, is really going to take a bit too much of your life. You see that in very practical ways when you have to book an online ticket or so, that takes you half an hour and this kind of nonsense. So you get a kind of societal reaction building up against this. The other thing is that indeed I've seen that how easy it is to capture the talents and the enthusiasm of people to do something that, unless I think very, very much, and many people are not inclined to do that, about what they are doing, that they actually are not serving the cause they think they serve. And the big problem is that they are faced with a choice which is very, very uncomfortable. But it's a choice either to go for it, says geeks being invited by the government to hack them, or to do nothing. And doing nothing is not really an option. What you would call my disillusionment is that quite often that has been going on for a long time, although personal things come into play, is that you see that very often the doing nothing option, funny enough, Dutch, but as far as I know, I'm not English speaker, the English language has not a word for it. The Dutch word, in Dutch, you say doen means to do. But laten, just one verb, means not doing. We have a verb both for doing and not doing.
Laten, you say.
Laten, yeah.
Laten.
Laten means something like leave alone.
Actively
not doing something. That is personally something that I'm exploring. And yes, I don't also not want to be pessimistic and say things like, oh yeah, it's the time of online activism is gone or something like that. No, but you have to.
I think he has to change the form. Last, exactly like what you said, this is when I was asked at Goldsmiths, if you remember a week ago, for the future of this, I said unions, workplace, parties. I mean, unless it's done through real organizations which have the constitutional power to change something politically already, it has very, very little. It's just going to become another, you know, they will be feeding, the state will be feeding off all those attempts, because they don't have, the online thing is not enough. They have to be connected. Yeah, they have to be connected with
state, it's also corporate,
with the check, where your pay comes. That's the place where you need to start hacking first. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.